The Secrets of Stargate is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to The Secrets of Stargate, episode 155.
General West, Jackson has identified the seventh symbol.
All right, here we go. We are about to try to make a connection.
All we gotta do is bust out of here, commandeer the ship, and fly on home.
Indeed. You say that a lot.
I know that this could be dangerous. But this is our job, right? It's what we signed on to do.
It was never about going home. It's about getting us to where we're going.
Hi, I'm Jack Berezini, and you're listening to The Secret to Stargate, where we talk about the hidden meanings and deeper layers found in the Stargate movies, TV series, and more. And joining me today are Lisa Jones. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Jack.
And Victor Lambs. Hey, Victor.
Hi, Jack.
Today we are discussing the fourth episode of Season 8 of SG-1, Zero Hour. Saying the specific show now is making it a mouthful.
Indeed.
O'Neill is discovering just how difficult being the man is. Which bunting is the right one for the president's visit? What to do about the alien kudzu that's taking over the SGC? Oh, and Baal might have captured Sam, Daniel, and Teal'c. Management jobs really suck. Which, having had a management job briefly,
yes.
I was so glad when I got moved out of that role. What were your thoughts on this episode, Lisa?
You know, I think this was kind of a fun one. It's, first of all, you get to see Walter talk quite a bit, which we never get to see. And they just, I don't know, I feel like they threw the kitchen sink at Jack and seeing him trying to settle into the role and realizing everything that General Hammond was doing. And I thought they did a creative way of getting SG-1 out of the way so that you could just see him interacting with everyone on base. And the pressure, and of course he does well, and of course nothing's wrong with SG-1, and you know, I mean, we got Ball and Davis, and I mean, they just brought everybody in. So I thought it was kind of—I don't think I liked it as much initially, but now I watched it, and I really thought it was just kind of fun.
Yeah, definitely. What about you, Victor?
Yeah, I didn't remember watching this episode when it originally aired, but of course I did because this aired back-to-back with the Atlantis episode that we'll be talking about next. But yeah, it's really good. Yeah, it's it is, you know, one of those, like, it's better to sometimes to be a individual contributor than a manager, I think, type things. But we really see Jack stepping into his shoes as leader of the SGC. So I like it. It's a really good episode.
Stepping into his own shoes, but not Hammond's black shiny shoes.
No, no, definitely not. Which we have there, yeah.
It's fun to see this because it's like the different perspective of all the different episodes that we've watched through all the seasons. Like, SG-1 being trapped in a secret base from Anubis would have been a whole episode in itself, but it's fun to see this is what's going on while they're on the planet, which I liked. And it's like all the daily stuff that goes on that you don't think about, which I feel like it gives you the appreciation for the support team of the SGC, which are not often in the spotlight.
Yeah, and it really communicates that it's very lonely at the top. Like, if you're the leader and everybody's looking to you for everything, you know, who do you look towards? And if we see that at the beginning of the episode where he reaches out to SG-1, and they're still, now there's some distance between them where they're like, yeah, we're going off, you know, to do this, and you have to stay here. We're not part of the same team. We're part of the same team, but not, you know, the same SG-1 team. And it really communicates just that if you're in that leadership role, it is initially very, very lonely. And we do see, though, that where the SGC rallies behind Jack towards the end, and you know, he feels that support.
They did a good job of capturing that feeling you have when you are either the leader, like, of like a team, or even just like a project, or if you have like your own like section of whatever thing where you always, no matter what you do, you feel like you're failing miserably.
Exactly.
And it's, I guess it's the imposter syndrome where no matter what. And then from the outside, like, you get the perspective of everyone around him who they support him completely, and they understand that, like, even if the decisions don't really make sense, like, he probably knows what he's doing, where in reality, he has no idea what he's doing, which that's how life is.
I know, every time, it's like whack-a-mole. Every time he makes a decision or tries to fix something, like the bunting, you know, he picks a bunting, and then, oh yeah, they can't get that bunting. And, you know, just one more thing coming up, and stuff, some of it, you know, you don't care about, like the bunting, you know, but you have to pick it. And then it becomes an issue. And then there's the plant. And, like, you know, I like that. He's used to going out with a gun and, like, you know, discovering things and defending things. And now he's, like, making all of these decisions.
And I love the title, too, Zero Hour, where you don't know what they're referring to. They just tell you at the beginning of the episode, 5 days to 0 hour, 4 days to 0 hour, 3 days to 0 hour. And you're like, oh, this is obviously when Baal attacks Earth, right?
Right.
You know, you're like, that has to be what it is. And then it's not till the very end you realize, oh, it's the visit from the president. And that's the real kind of crisis for Jack as a leader right now, is getting everything squared away before the president gets here. And he has to resign because he realizes he's over his head.
Yeah.
But of course, he's not over his head. You know, things do get fixed.
And we also get that little tease at the beginning with Mark Gilmore, his civilian aide, who's he comes in and Walter is like, here's your aide, General Hammond sent him, and that kind of gives him the okay from Jack. But he picks up the phone as soon as he gets in his office and says that he's in position and he doesn't suspect anything. So you got that over the whole episode where you're like, is he a nefarious actor or what's going on? But I liked that. And I also like how Walter is thanking him. He's like, I'm really, really happy you're here.
Because Walter's like a sergeant, right? He's not meant to be a chief of staff or, an officer's liaison or whatever job he's been thrust into here. And that is where, you know, Gary Jones, background as a stand-up comedian comes in, where he's able to finally talk and deliver these lines like so straight, but they're so funny too.
It's like he meets Richard Dean Anderson's all that quippiness, that quick back and forth, the two of them together. I know, I was thinking, I want to see more of that. That back and forth was just great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you do like Gary Jones, watch the commentaries from seasons 6 and 7, because he's a frequent guest on the commentaries. But because he doesn't actually direct or write the episodes, all he does is kind of riff on them. And so you get a lot of that humor.
Nice.
Stuff. Yeah.
It's like Mystery Science Theater with
pretty much Gary Jones. With Walter, yeah.
Nice. He also does have a Stargate training video course that he made that I think you can find online. So,
yeah, definitely. He did that through the companion app, so you might be able to find that.
Nice. And I it's just one problem after another, and it's. The big problem, and I put that in air quotes because it doesn't turn out to actually be a problem, is the fact that they think that Baal has captured SG-1 and is going to execute them unless Jack does a prisoner exchange with Calamus, who is the Gould that requested asylum. And of course, asylum for a Gould means you get to sit in a prison and not die.
Yeah, which he's none too pleased about.
Right. Yeah, he was shocked and upset. He's a prisoner.
Yeah. Played by Steve Basic, who is an excellent actor in this or any other series that he is in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like his character because he's not even trying to wheedle with Jack. It's like he says that line about you wouldn't do this out of the goodness of your heart. It's like, of course not.
Yeah.
He's just straight up with him, which I appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And on this plot, we get lots of ups and downs. It's like Calamus says, yes, I found this ancient site. You should go there and that will prove my good faith. And lo and behold, they find a ZPM, which in Atlantis becomes the biggest MacGuffin and the most valuable thing that they could have. So a new ZPM opens up so many possibilities. They can defend Earth. They can dial Pegasus. They can power ships. But of course, then we learn that, oh no, he's actually tainted the ZPM. So if they hook it up to anything, it will go kaboom. There'll be a giant earth-shattering kaboom, a solar system-shattering kaboom. And so I like how they kind of build it up. For the audience, you're like, oh, cool, ZPM. And then you're like, oh no. But yeah.
And I feel like that was a more realistic take on how these things often go. It's not, here's the one fix to the solution. It's you keep thinking that you found the fix, and it's not. It's like plugging holes in a wall, and you keep finding another leak. Yeah, I liked that, and I liked the plant that they bring through. And at the beginning, Gilmore is asking, like, shouldn't you not be bringing alien life through? And they're like, but it's just a plant. And I feel like there's been an episode previously where a plant was the problem. So it's funny that they're so blasé about that.
Yeah. Whatever gets us more Bill Dow as Dr. Lee, I'm good with that.
That's right.
True.
Yeah. With Sam and Daniel both off world, we get a lot of Dr. Lee in this episode, and I'm down for that.
Yes. I think Gilmore's reaction to it was kind of like what we have said in almost every podcast episode, which is, did you not learn anything from the last time? You're like, what are you doing? But it gives us so many great moments with Siler and Dr. Lee, and you know, like, and then you know, Jack even makes reference to Little Shop of Horrors, you know, and calls it Seymour, and it was just a great kind of, I don't want to say comedic thread that ran through it, but you know, it's just like one more thing that isn't going right, and oh yeah, we've got to fix it, and then you've got all this other stuff going on, and then. You know, it's like, okay, we have a solution, but we don't, but we do. But then, you know, oh no, it's going to ruin the base. So,
and that it's not like it's like a major annoyance that just happens to like start breaking all the electrical systems, and it shuts down the gate and fries the gate computer, which throws another wrench in the problem with Ball. And it's like just all those different little things happening at once.
Everything that can go wrong will, and at the worst possible moment. And and I love the way Dr. Lee communicates bad news to his boss, you know, Jack. It's like, it's always like, well, you know, we got a little problem type thing. And then the scene where they're actually like shaving bits off the ZPM and then showing Jack like how it would blow up, and they're wearing those like goofy goggles. Apparently Richard Dean Anderson had like a big problem wearing those goggles because they were so goofy. But I think it's just a really good contrast where you have the very bad information that Dr. Lee is sharing, but he looks so ridiculous wearing those things. But it's a really good scene.
It's funny that he did not like wearing those goggles, because I feel like physical comedy like that is something that he excels in. Like, we get the magnifying glass.
We've seen that in this show before, but of course I think it comes up a couple times in the Back to the Future movies. It's in Back to the Future 3, which I was watching recently. So yeah, you can always tell when he's goofing around with the props there.
Yes.
And then we also had the delegates from I can't remember what planet won't negotiate. So he says to lock them up. And I mean, I kind of wondered watching this, how many of these were just like plot threads that they never fully developed into a whole episode that they were like, okay, remember that idea? Like, let's throw that in. Okay, let's throw this in too. And, you know, just like whatever's still hanging out there, let's just throw it all in together.
Yeah, they were intending to do more with those delegates. They had this whole like kind of comedic thing where they would like pop in and stuff, but they, just for time, they just kind of cut all of that out. The other interesting thing about this episode was that it was filmed over the course of, I think, like 4 weeks, you know, so whenever they could get Richard Dean Anderson, and they would have to like, you know, so they would have to like set up all the plants and then take all the plants down to film something else in the SGC and then set all the plants up again. And most of the plants are fake, except for the ones that Siler is burning with the torch. They couldn't use the petroleum-based plants for that one.
Huh, nice. Probably a good idea.
Yeah.
I always wonder about that, like, because episodes of TV shows, and I'm sure this is something I could just go look up, but I've not gotten around to it, but like, when you hear about, like, you know, episodes of TV shows will have a director, but then you hear about the way TV shows are filmed, where it's like different parts of different episodes at different times based on like crew schedule and the actor schedule and everything. So I feel like they get really confusing since it's not linear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's difficult enough on a movie where they film things out of sequence, but to like film whole entire episodes, you know, piecemeal like that.
And then you think about the continuity.
Yeah.
You know, the set, their clothes, their hair, their, you know, everything. That just seems like more work.
Yeah, and Dr. Lee's lab in this is also Dr. Jackson's lab, Dr. Carter's lab, the isolation room in the infirmary, you know. So I can only imagine, like, you walk in and it's, you know, or having to redress the set, like, every day for something else.
I wonder if they saved that that tipping room they used for the flooding scene in that one episode. So I don't think we've ever seen that again.
No, or Ball's kind of chamber where they trap Jack. I don't think we see that again either. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
Sure. And it is fun to get Ball back because he's such a great character, and his repartee he has with Jack. Like, they almost, I mean, I know Ball is evil and he horribly tortured Jack and probably gave him lasting traumatic PTSD, but they just seem like buddies at a certain point, the way they go at each other.
I think that's one of the reasons why Ball becomes such a fan favorite, is because of the way that they interact and communicate with each other. People seem to be able to forgive him for torturing Jack because he just, gosh darn, is such a fun bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I know Anubis is the big bad and he's dangerous. He just doesn't have the charisma, though. He's he often comes across as a discount Palpatine to me. So
I love that. Yeah, Cliff Simon definitely had a lot of charisma in this role.
And I like that they have, and like you said, Lisa, about multiple different plot threads, like, it's nice to see that all going on at once, because usually the perspective we get on the episodes is there's this big thing going on and this is the thing that everyone's focused on. But now we get, you know, the delegates and the evil kudzu and Ball and even the stupid, like, managerial things like tastings for the buffet and all that.
Yeah, that everyone else on the base actually is doing things.
Yeah.
While SG-1 is off saving the world or, you know, whatever it is they're doing this week.
And it's also nice to see the rest of the SGC solving problems without Daniel and Teal'c and Sam there to save the day. Like, we get that quip at one point where they can't currently dial out because the computer's fried, and he says something about how Sam would have this fixed in, like, you know, in a minute, and he's like, no offense, Siler. Siler's just none taken.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that they were able to get everything fixed and taken care of without SG-1 there.
Yeah. And then, of course, I love the whole general concern that SG-1 is captured, being tortured, something really bad is happening. And then I love that they just waltz up at the end and they're like, we were trapped. It was fine. Yeah. What's the problem? And, you know, no clue what's going on.
Yeah, I feel like there was a bit of a SG-5 might have done a bit more reconnaissance. But again, we get the fact that Sam told them to guard the gate. And she has some regrets about that, or not really regrets, but uncertainty in her new role as the leader of SG-1, which is kind of paralleling Jack's uncertainty. I like that, and I like the scene where he's talking to her about that. And you get a good contrast there, because he's been going through this whole thing where he feels like he doesn't know what he's doing and he's failing, but he can see, and from her perspective, she feels like she's doing the same thing, but he can see that she is not, and she's doing what she should be doing, but he's not able to see that for himself, which is, I feel like, probably the best kind of leader to have, because you don't want someone who just thinks no matter what they do, they're right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I thought that was really good. The whole, I mean, it did seem kind of shoehorned in at the end that Sam was getting an evaluation. Like, we've never really seen that in the show. But, like we never saw Hammond giving Jack an evaluation or something, but
yeah.
So it seemed kind of tacked on, but you know, I'll forgive that, of course.
But I did like that scene, them walking through the corridor, because it just seemed very natural. I mean, there were a couple of instances, and then in the early part of the episode in the conference room, you know, where Jack says something like, you know, do we all know each other or something? And, you know, Daniel gives them little quips about, we know each other's life stories. And, you know, I like that they didn't act like they haven't been working together the last 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, they kept that camaraderie when they were all together.
And they do a good job of balancing the fact that they can push him a bit more just because of that history and because of the seniority they kind of have. But at the end of the day, he's still the one who makes the final decision.
Mm-hmm. And they'll push, but then they will listen to him and, respect what he has to say as their leader.
I did like the kind of, well, I mean, one motif I liked, I did like the conversation with Mark Gilmore and Jack at the end where, you know, he's like finally confessing. It's like, hey, I have a confession to make. I've been kind of a plant from the president. Before he showed up and endorsed you, he wanted to make sure you could run everything. And Jack's like, yeah, I know. Hammond told me. And, you know, Gilmore's like, well, he shouldn't have told you that. And Jack's like, well, don't tell anyone, you know. And so it's good that even though, you know, Gilmore was there under kind of, you know, less than upfront circumstances, you know, he's still on Jack's side, too, you know. Mm-hmm. Now that Jack has proven himself.
Especially since the whole episode, you weren't really sure what was...
Yeah, if he's an ID or what, yeah.
Right. And he kept questioning things. And I didn't know if it was, you know, naive or kind of bad intent. But he did. He kept asking questions. Should you be provoking Ball? Should you be, you know, doing these things? And, you know, but at the very end, my question was, so is Jack getting another assistant? Because I think he needs one. I mean, I'm just saying.
Gilmore was a good assistant. He brought him coffee and stuff. And even though Jack didn't like it, but, you know, he did bring Jack coffee.
He took care of all that paperwork on the desk.
Yeah,
they need to keep Gilmore on. He seems like a good balance for Jack. And I like that even from the beginning, he wasn't antagonistic to Jack. Like he didn't have any other agenda other than he's actually going to evaluate him for the president. Like there wasn't any sort of, I'm going to try to find something wrong with him. Like he was just doing his honest job. And even though he couldn't inform Jack of that, he wasn't trying to undermine him at all.
Yeah. And then the other motif is Jack is writing this letter to Hammond, throughout the episode, you know, hunting and pecking on the keyboard as he writes it very slowly over the course of 5 days, his resignation letter saying, you know, I don't feel fit to run the SGC. And so we have that kind of, is another kind of through line throughout the entire episode.
I liked that. Although I feel like in reality, Jack's resignation letter would hopefully be more formal because he just started off with a dear General Hammond, which is just fun. But
I think his resignation letter in real life would have been something like, I resign.
Exactly.
Yeah, he would just say it.
Well, and then he prints it out, even though at the end he's like, never mind. He prints it out and signs it. So why would you just not hit like, hold backspace and erase the whole thing? And
I really liked us seeing him type it out and read it. And that was nice. I don't think that's something they've done in the show before. So it was kind of a nice little moment to hear what he would, because he's writing to General Hammond not just as his boss, but as like you would a friend.
Yeah.
You know, so that was kind of nice.
I guess maybe he printed it out for posterity. If he gets the yips again, he can just look at it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe he actually sent it.
Maybe.
He was going to give it to his assistant to mail.
I feel like General Hammond would get a kick out of it.
Yeah, especially that never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I like this episode a lot. It's a nice change of pace, and I feel like they're trying to do different things with the SG-1 formula now that Atlantis is also on the air. And that I feel like that's kind of taken up the exploration mantle of the show. And this is digging into more character and world building. And I know we're going to get a lot less Jack. So it's nice that we got a Jack-centric episode that utilized his character well. Because I feel like we've gotten some that are just kind of meh. But I like this one a lot.
Yeah. And you think about it, it was pretty much a bottle episode. I'm trying to remember if there was any, there was a little bit of Offworld.
Yeah,
right?
Just a very tiny bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But for a, you know, we always kind of hate on bottle episodes, but I actually thought it was done really well because it kept moving. There were so many plots going on, a lot of characters for a change.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of like really good characters that we've seen before, some new ones, and really explores like the vulnerability of Jack that we haven't really seen a lot. In the show, you know, he's always like the quippy guy and stuff. And now he has to be the leader and, you know, he's insecure about that. And so it was kind of a cool episode for that.
And he's funny, but he wasn't joking. He's taking his job seriously, you know, not like what they could, you know, what they could have done with the character.
So. He all but admits that he uses humor as a defense mechanism against actually opening up about his feelings at one point, which I liked. When they're in the radiation suits because they have to use gamma rays to get rid of the plants.
Yeah.
It's very deep. That's very like observant of his character for himself. Yeah.
Yep. Awesome. Did y'all have any other thoughts on this episode?
No, it was a really good episode. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Did we have any fun alternate language titles for this?
Yeah, I'm looking at that now. In mostly Zero Hour, but in Czech, for some reason, they call it the H Hour. So I don't know if, why H? I'll have to do some deep dive on the Czech language there. And I've not, let's see here, German, we got like Stunde der Barung, which is proving hour. So I don't know. The same deal, you know.
Nice.
But yeah, I do like the idea of Zero Hour and you don't know like what it's referring to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a nice. I guess they could have just called it like Jack's no good, terrible, awful day or whatever. But
yeah,
it's nice to have it more mysterious.
And I guess Dr. Brightman was supposed to be in this episode, but they cut a scene of hers for time.
Yeah, I saw that. I was kind of wondering where she would have fit into all of this, but that's fine.
Yeah. Maybe
Siler got injured.
Yeah, and for fans of Late Night with Conan O'Brien, I forgot to mention this. Pierre Bernard, who was a graphic designer on the Conan O'Brien show, but would have like this thing where he would, I think, review TV and like sit in a chair. I'm trying to remember. It was, you know, 20 plus years ago, but he would talk about Stargate a lot on the Conan O'Brien show. And so NBC did this whole thing where they sent him to Vancouver. And so in one of the scenes, instead of Walter as the gate technician, we get Pierre Bernard, the, you know, the graphic designer, you know, walk on character from Conan O'Brien as the gate technician. And I guess to reciprocate, they brought members of, you know, producers and stuff from SG, from Stargate to the Conan O'Brien show and stuff and had them, you know, do bits there as well. I'll have to look up and see if any of those are online or anything, but.
Nice. That's awesome. That's
cool. Yeah.
I'm always jealous of these people who get to do like walk-on parts and cameos in their favorite TV shows. Like, that's my dream is one day to be able to do that on Star Trek, but I don't have those connections.
Yeah.
Awesome. We do have some feedback. We got a couple pieces on our April, I think it was the April Fool, April 1st episode. It was previously a Patreon exclusive episode. So if you want to get those early, you can sign up for the Patreon at sqpn.com/give. But this is on our episode we did on Stargate Origins. Kevin McCabe commented on our YouTube video. He said, Origins was terrible. No budget, no direction. And as a kind of a ying to that yang, we have a Thomas's Musings commented on the same video saying, I thought it was pretty good, or at least it doesn't deserve the fandom's negative reception. So I gotta say, I feel like talking about it gave me a greater appreciation for it than I initially had. Like, you guys are both right. It did have no budget and did not feel like it had a lot of direction, but I don't think it deserves the hate that it often gets.
I agree. You're both right.
Yeah.
Yes. Awesome. Before we go, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create The Secret to Stargate and to make those fun episodes about things like Origins. Laura S., Leilani S., Matthew K., Teresa H., and Robert G. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue The Secret to Stargate and all the shows at StarQuest. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And be sure to follow the show on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and you can find the video versions at youtube.com/StarQuestMedia. That is where we get a lot of our feedback, and you also get to see our, I guess I could say, beautiful smiling faces. And if you want to check out something cool, you can just see this on YouTube. My wife likes to crochet and make awesome things. This is her Bilbo that she is currently working on.
That's amazing.
I'm showing
her. Yeah.
She doesn't think she's talented. She's extremely talented. So
it is. Yeah. I mean,
that's cool.
Yeah. That's an amazing figure there.
Are you going to be in trouble for showing it?
We'll find out. So if you'd like to see Liz's awesome work in progress Bilbo, you can check out youtube.com/StarQuestMedia. And that's where we also have a lot of good comments. So. And to find the previous episodes of Secret to Stargate and to send feedback, please visit sqpn.com/stargate, and you can email us at stargate@sqpn.com and follow StarQuest on social media at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia or on Twitter/X @sqpn. And we'll be back next time when we'll be discussing the next episode of Atlantis, 38 Minutes.
Yay!
Until then, Lisa Jones, thank you for joining me in sharing the Secret to Stargate.
Thanks, Jack.
And Victor Lambs, thank you too.
Thanks, Jack, and nothing in Peridot?
I'm working on it. I'll have to ask Liz. She might have some. And once again, I'm Jack Berezini. Thank you for listening to The Secret to Stargate on StarQuest.
Anyway, I'm sorry, but that just happens to be how I feel about it. What do you think?
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy. The Secrets of Doctor Who. Find the show wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/Doctor Who.